ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Charismatic, rich, stylish, glamorous. Christopher and Pixie Skase were the it couple of the 80s.
Getting an invitation to a Skase party was prized real estate.
But when their business empire teeters, it's Pixie who pays a massive price.
A sort of gilded cage that she was a prisoner in.
I'm Mark Humphreys. To binge the full series now, search for ABC Rewind and look for Skase, Fall of a Tycoon on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Norman Swan, I think it's no secret that you quite enjoy sharing your ailments, particularly your chronic knee pain.
You drag it out of me.
I don't think I do. I think you're quite quick to volunteer. What are you like with pain?
It just depends. You know, if I stub my toe, I let loose foul expletives in such a loud voice that people think I'm dying. If I'm having a procedure done to me which is uncomfortable, I just grin and bear it. And when something sort of serious happens, like I slice a finger cooking, as I often do,
oh wow,
I'm fairly cool.
Okay. So it depends on the context.
Yeah.
I think that's the same for me. I think if I'm having a particularly horrific day and I'm exhausted, I react quite poorly. But I do think I do a lot of reasoning with myself when things are serious, like you do.
Yeah. And, you know, that's acute pain. But chronic pain is a different matter altogether. But it's similarly, your brain does get involved in how you perceive it and your situation.
And there's lots of stuff that needs to be taken into account, your childhood experiences, your history. And I think it's far more complex than what people realise.
That's just part of what's coming up on the Health Report.
I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
And I'm Norman Swan on Cubby Cubby Land. Also on the show, we're going to follow up on a story that we've been pursuing over the last 2 or 3 weeks, which is about allergies in kids. We keep on getting a lot of mail about it, and there's a lot of confusion amongst parents about how they should introduce allergens to their kids, when and how frequently. So we're going to actually get back to basics and give some simple information.
We're going to simplify things. And you've also got a story, Norman, that connects the nervous system to cancer.
Yeah, nerves supplying the tumour might actually make it grow. And when they've actually got down to it, the chemical messengers are very similar to the chemical messengers, talking about pain, that actually create the pain of migraine. And so it might be that migraine drugs could help treat bowel cancer. Mm-hmm. More of that later.
In the news, August this year is the first month that influenza has been more deadly than COVID-19. So there's been more influenza deaths than COVID deaths for the first time since February 2020.
This comes from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And just to explain, in the light of the COVID pandemic, they are now recording deaths from respiratory infections, three respiratory infections, influenza, COVID, and respiratory syncytial virus. And we've talked a lot about respiratory syncytial virus. There's a vaccine for it now. And they've recorded the deaths from these three viruses over time. And in August, for the first time since the pandemic began, flu has overtaken COVID deaths.
Worth pointing out that it's been a fairly significant flu season with record numbers. So there's been more than 410,000 lab-confirmed cases, and that's likely an underestimation, Norman, given a lot of people are now doing at-home test kits, so not all of them are lab-documented. And very unfortunately, children have been disproportionately affected by the flu season again this year.
They have. And overall this year, COVID deaths still outnumber flu deaths, but only by a little. And the question here is, who's dying? Are there any surprises here? What's happening with respiratory syncytial virus? Because that's kind of a sleeper here, because it is a serious illness, particularly in kids. And influenza, because influenza immunization rates have fallen. So COVID is still in older people. There are younger people dying of it, but basically it's in older people still.
That's right. And when it comes to RSV, the statistics also suggest that the deaths from respiratory syncytial virus or RSV have actually risen compared with the previous 2 years, whereas the COVID deaths have been decreasing. Do you think that COVID is now seasonal? Is that the implication here potentially, that it peaks during the cooler months?
That's what everybody's been waiting for. And when we were doing the CoronaCast podcast, it was a major topic of discussion because there was no seasonality to it. You know, flu is a seasonal virus unless it's in pandemic mode. And when you have a pandemic virus, there's no seasonality to it. It just happens all year. And there's just a little bit of a hint that COVID might be becoming seasonal, which would be good news because that means it's moving away from that pandemic feel, if you like, or that pandemic epidemiology. So there's a peak, as there has been right since the beginning, over Christmas, a peak, and another peak over autumn, early winter as well. So it's not necessarily in timing with the cold weather yet. Probably too early to say that it's seasonal, but there is a regular pattern.
And probably a nice time, given we're about to hit the Christmas season, to see if you're eligible for a booster and if you're up to date or not.
And just before we leave these statistics, because the mortality rate from COVID-19 is, according to these data, is 1.5 times higher in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people compared to non-Indigenous people. And in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, you know, First Nations women, the rate of mortality is 2.3 times higher than for non-Indigenous women. And that emphasises the vaccine guidelines, which do suggest that Aboriginal people should be immunised at an earlier age.
Staying in the COVID realm, there's also been some research published in Obstetrics and Gynaecology, which has tried to look at maternal infection with COVID during pregnancy and the potential association with neurodevelopmental diagnoses in children. And this is a study that is retrospective. It's looked at just over 18,000 births in the US, in Boston. And they've looked at mums who've had confirmed COVID infection during pregnancy, so confirmed with a PCR test in the lab.
And this was during the pandemic.
That's right, in the peak of the pandemic, March 2020 to May 2021. And the main outcome they've looked at is the development of a neurodevelopmental diagnosis by the age of 36 months, so 3 years of age. And they found that there is actually a higher risk of neurodevelopmental diagnosis in these children whose mums had an infection during COVID, and the risk was higher if there was exposure in the third trimester and in male offspring.
So I think the main message from here is, I mean, that this is a study looking back. It's been pretty well done. You can say that there is an increased risk. Could be through brain inflammation. It could be all sorts of reasons why this might occur. The bottom line here is, for both flu and COVID-19, pregnant women need to be immunised.
And people might have seen stuff out of the US with RFK Jr. because there have been changes to the vaccine schedule there, and COVID vaccination is no longer recommended for pregnant people, but certainly in Australia it still is. And if you're pregnant, you're at higher risk of COVID complications, so vaccination is still recommended.
So we need to congratulate Professor Lydia Murawska from Queensland University of Technology, who won the Prime Minister's Science Prize this week. There are always people who are worthy of the prize, but particularly Lydia, and in particular since we've just been talking about COVID-19.
So Lydia was awarded in 2021 one of the most influential people in the world by Time magazine, the top 100 influential people. And I recall, Norman, being a GP on the ground at the start of the pandemic when there was huge debate about how COVID was transmitted, and Lydia was integral.
She was, because we had advising the government a group of people who didn't believe in aerosol spread, who were out of date in terms of the science, and they were going back to 1940s science. So they believed you got it off surfaces, you caught it at close quarters, that's why we had 1.5 metres distance between people. But in fact, it was spread through fine aerosol particles. So if you were quite distant from somebody and you were breathing the same air as them over a period of time, you could actually catch COVID-19, which went against all the advice. And Lydia's point for years has been, we care much more about the quality of outside air than indoor air. And we weren't taking precautions. And we still haven't changed much in the way of our indoor air regulations. But Lydia got together 200-odd of the world's experts in this area, and they published an argument saying, you know, showing the evidence that this was aerosol spread. But I heard that one of the advisors to the government called me a miasmatist, which was essentially going back to the Middle Ages, where, in fact, they probably kind of knew that some of these were aerosol spread, and the miasma was the air that came from the ground and spread disease. Well, I was actually pretty proud to be called a miasmatist, along with Lydia.
Well, I have to say, after that letter was published, the very next day, the World Health Organization actually accepted the airborne pathway of infection transmission, which is, you know, that's a significant contribution to management during the pandemic. I think we should also, whilst we're celebrating good news, just call out the fact that this year there was also the Prime Minister's inaugural prize for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander knowledge systems, and it went to Malgana man Michael Ware, who is doing work on sea cucumbers and an Indigenous-led fishery and seagrass restoration, which is just nice. Good news.